Morning.
Morning.
When I walked in this morning, the first thing that Paul said to me was, "Did you get my email?" And I thought, oh no, we've got a scheduling conflict, but that was not the case. It was about something else, and after my heart rate returned to normal, we proceeded. We hear things in life, and we hear things, and I guess in this context, particularly in the religious world or with our Christian walk, and their phrases or their thoughts or their things that we don't necessarily use in our daily life, but yet we know what they mean, or at least we kind of think we know what they mean. An example of this, it would be like our hearts. You know, we commit things to our hearts, or the law is written on our hearts. But have you ever really thought about what our heart is compared to like our mind? Why, you know, I think with my brain, at least I think so. You know, science tells me that my heart pumps blood, but yet the scripture tends to say that there's something special about the heart and what that is. But yet I think we globally understand what we mean by heart, but sometimes there's just a little bit maybe ambiguity to it, or sometimes it might be good for us to take a look at those things. And that's an example. That's not actually what I'm going to speak on this morning, but something somewhat similar to that, or at least a phrase that I've heard time and time and time again in my life, and I know many of us have as well, is taking up our cross daily. Taking up our cross. Like, what does that mean? Is that just a figure of speech as likened to rolling up our sleeves? It doesn't necessarily mean anything. It just means that we're to get busy. Or is taking up our cross, are there actually some tangible things that we can do that embody or encompass taking up our cross? Take up your cross or bear your cross is found 6 times in the Gospels. The Gospel accounts, the first 4 books of the New Testament, record that phrase or something very similar to that 6 times. And all 6 of those times that it's recorded, it's followed by a statement. Does anybody know what that statement is? Follow me. Take up your cross, bear your cross, and follow me. Okay, so now if we have this phrase, and immediately following that is to follow him, then it maybe bears some importance to understand a little bit of what that phrase means. Assuming that we all do want to follow Christ, or we wouldn't be here, then maybe understanding a little bit of what taking up our cross is would be a good thing. A little bit about the cross, and I know many of us know this already, but death on the cross was not a noble way of death. It is not a noble punishment. Death on the cross was not fun, and I don't think death in any capacity is probably fun, but it was not a clean death. It was a very gruesome, bloody death reserved for those who were slaves or the worst of the criminals, murderers, rapists, and the like. And not only can we find that information from history, but Paul in the book of Philippians even hints at this a little bit in the second verse, in the second chapter in verse 8, when he's talking about how Christ was humbled and came down to earth from his exalted place in heaven. And in verse 8, he says, being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death. He became obedient to the point of death, even to the death of the cross. Indicating that the death of the cross was worse than just regular death. It's not that he just became obedient to the death, but obedient to the worst of the death. Death on the cross. God chose a symbol of pain and of shame and of torture as a method to provide hope, victory, and salvation. And Christ tells us 6 times in the New Testament that we are to bear this symbol. We are to bear this. The cross is no longer, as it was then, a symbol of torture and shame, but yet a badge of honor that we as Christians ought to wear. Not to flash, not to be boastful or proud about, but to wear in confidence and in solidarity. Albert Barnes, some of you may have some of his works or some of his commentaries. I don't agree with everything that he has to say, but he has a quote here about bearing our cross that I would like to read, and it's unfortunately a tad lengthy, and I know that hearing quotes read can be a little bit difficult, but hopefully you can bear with me here. Albert Barnes' thoughts on this subject says, "To carry the cross is a figurative expression denoting that we must endure whatever is burdensome, trying, or considered disgraceful in following Christ." So it's this figure of speech that encompasses things that are burdensome, trying, or disgraceful in following Christ. It consists of simply doing our duty, let the world think of it or speak of it as they may. So just doing our duty, irregardless of what people may think about it or say about it. It does not consist of making trouble for ourselves. So bearing our cross or suffering at the cross does not go around trying to find shame. You know, sometimes people look for ways to stand out or look for ways to maybe be persecuted or something like that. And Barnes's thoughts on that don't agree with that. It does not consist in making trouble for ourselves. It is just doing what is required of us in the scripture. Let it produce whatever shame, disgrace, or pain that it may. I'll read that last portion again because that's really what I like. It is just doing what is required of us in the scripture. Let it produce whatever shame, disgrace, or pain that it may. Bearing the cross is doing what we ought to do, is living our lives as we ought to live, irregardless of what it may produce. As I said earlier, this is mentioned 6 times in the New Testament, and it appears that these 6 times are actually 3 separate incidences. We have some of the parallel gospels recounting some of the same scriptures. We have one incident that's recorded in Matthew chapter 10 that was read for us this morning, and also a parallel passage in Luke 14. We have another instance in Mark chapter 10, verse 21, where Christ is talking to the rich young ruler. And then we have a third instance that it appears that's in Matthew 16, Mark 8, and Luke 9. I'd like to turn over quickly to Matthew, the 10th chapter, and take a look at the passage that we find there and read a little bit about what we can learn about what this is or what this means to bear a cross. Matthew chapter 10, and the specific quote is in verse 38, but I'd like to back up to verse 34 and get a little bit of a running start towards this. Matthew chapter 10, verse 34. Do not think that I came to bring peace on earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set a man against a father and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's enemies will be those of his own household. He who loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he who loves his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Verse 38, and he who does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. And he who finds his life will lose it, and he who loses his life will find it. Loses his life for my sake will find it. What can we learn about bearing our cross in this passage? Well, one, right out of the gate, he says that Christ is going to cause strife. Being a Christian is going to cause a certain amount of strife, and I know a number of us have encountered that in a number of capacities, even within families. And that's a horrible dynamic. But my family's has that, and most of all of our families probably do too, when you have people who are trying to follow Christ and people who aren't. And passions can run high, tempers can flare, and there will be strife because of this. It also indicates that we ought to love Christ more than our family and that we are good to lose our life for his sake. Losing our life for his sake. That's an interesting concept or an interesting thought. And Paul speaks to this a little bit in Philippians. It's a famous passage. We won't necessarily have to turn there. But in Philippians chapter 3, when he's giving his resume, talking about how if anybody wants to boast about their credentials on this world, I have more so reason to do so. Talking about his resume as a Pharisee and his education and things like that. And in verse 8, the culmination of this, he says, yet indeed I also count all things lost for the excellence of the knowledge of Christ, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things, and I count them as rubbish, as I may gain Christ. Everything that I had, everything that I used to have, all that stuff, that prominence that I had in the Jewish community is rubbish. I count it as rubbish. It doesn't mean anything. Forsaking all that we have. Mark the 10th chapter and verse 21. We find another passage in which this statement is used. Mark chapter 10 and verse 21. Here Christ is talking to the rich young ruler. My bookmark fell. Mark chapter 10, verse 21. Then Jesus, looking at him, loved him and said to him, one thing you lack, go your way. Sell whatever you have, give to the poor, and have your treasure laid in heaven. And come, take up the cross and follow me. In verse 22, but he was sad at this word, and he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. This is something that I don't know if I personally struggle with it or I just think that in a nation that we can struggle with it. But just the concept of our possessions and how much time we spend trying to obtain possessions. I read one man quote talking about how time and money have an inverse relationship and how in this society we spend more and more of our time to try and get more and more money, even if we don't have time to enjoy the money. But we just spend more and more. We work overtime. We go to college. We spend all this time trying to accumulate these things. But really, as we age and as we get older, we find out that time is a more valuable commodity than money. And this young man struggled with that there. And I think at times we perhaps as a society can struggle with that ourselves. Recently, just back at middle of late June, an opportunity at work came up for a promotion. I enjoy advancement. I enjoy promotion. So I raised my hand and stated my case, of which I thought was a phenomenal case for a promotion. apparently, some others that are outranked me didn't quite think my case was as phenomenal as mine. And I didn't get it. And I can joke about it a little bit. But over the past 6 weeks, 4, 6, 8 weeks at work, there was a little bit of tension. Because I felt like it was something that I'd put in 3 years at this company. I'd done good work. I know that I've done good work. People have told me I've done good work. And yet, I didn't get this promotion. Not only did I not get this promotion, but they brought somebody in from outside, which is fine. But then they tap me on the shoulder. Yeah, Shane, we're going to need you to train this one. Oh. So I'm not good enough for the job, but I'm good enough to train the person for the job. And some of us have probably been there. And that's a tough spot to be in. That is. And that there's a whole lot of things there's a whole lot of feathers that got ruffled. But, you know, every single one of those feathers was associated with basically, and I hate to say it, but I can say it now, is pride. You know, I had to check myself and step back. Do I need more money? No. I'd like to have it, but I don't need more money. I didn't need the increase in salary. Did I need the prestige? No. But it just ruffled my feathers so much to say, well, hey, no, you don't get it, but we need you to train this person. And I really had to step back and check myself and find that, you know, maybe at the root of things, Shane at times isn't so much different than the rich young ruler, getting attached to things of this world and prominence perhaps in our position at work or in our position in society. Just checking what does and doesn't matter. And I found that promotions, at least that's what I'm telling myself right now, don't matter until the next one comes up, and then I'm going to raise my hand again. That's how it goes. Matthew chapter 16. I'd like to turn there, and this is the passage that was read for us this morning in the reading. Matthew, the 16th chapter, verse 24. And this very similar phrasing is also echoed in Mark 8 and Luke 9. We can't guarantee that it's all one occurrence, but it seems like it is just because of the similarities that are said. Starting in verse 24, Matthew 16, verse 24, then Jesus said to his disciples, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Similar thoughts that we've read before. Verse 26, for what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? And then verse 27 and 28 go on to talk about how a man will be rewarded according to his deeds. I'm not going to take the time to turn to any of the other three just because we'll move along. But if I could take a consolidated list, if we go through all six of these passages and write bullet points as to what the points Christ is trying to make as what it means to take up our cross, this is the consolidated list that I would find. That we are to, I'll step back. In Luke chapter 9, we didn't turn there, but Luke chapter 9, in Matthew 10 it says that if anybody loves his family more than Christ, then he can't do it. In Luke chapter 9, it says that he must hate his father and mother. He uses the word hate, which has ruffled some feathers and caused some angst about that. That word for hate is the exact same word that's used in Matthew when he says that you can't serve two masters. Either you will love the one and hate the other. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you will hate it. I mean, it says that you can't serve God and money. Well, I don't hate money. And I don't think he wants us to hate money, but it's a comparative thing. It's a relative comparison between the two. And so here when he says to hate our families, he doesn't mean for us to hate our families, but as a relative comparison between our love for Christ and our love for families, it ought to be in order. So the consolidated list, we are to, one, hate our family in life, love it less than we love Christ, forsake all that we have, lose our life for the sake of the gospel. We are to deny ourselves. I'll come back to that. Who would exchange the whole world for our soul? If we are ashamed of Christ, he will be ashamed of us. Luke chapter 9 also tells us that it's a daily activity. And also we find that serving Christ will cause strife. Serving Christ will cause strife. So if we are to daily take up our cross, and as he says that we are to deny ourselves, what is it that we are to deny? Why would Christ say to deny ourselves? I'd like to turn over to Galatians, the 5th chapter, and find some thoughts regarding that. Galatians chapter 5, verse 24. And those who are Christ's have crucified the flesh with its passions and its desires. Here we have crucifixion again, the same image of Christ or bearing our cross. And we have crucified the passions of the flesh. Romans 15:1 also tells us that we are to deny ourselves for the betterment of others. It's talking about liberty that we have there, and then it's better that we just abstain from things if it's going to help others. So we ought to sometimes deny things that we are maybe things that we A, want to do, and B, perhaps are even entitled to do. But yet if it's better for other brethren and better for our service to Christ, that we ought to deny ourselves. And why is this? As I get thinking about why are we to deny ourselves, why would that be a good thing? I came to the conclusion, and I'm sure some of us probably already have, that sin is rooted in selfishness. Try and think of a sin that you can commit that's not selfish. Theft. Why do people steal? Because they want it. Lying. Why do people lie? Usually it's so they can gain prestige or gain some sort of advantage, or it's so they can avoid some sort of punishment. I didn't do it. Then why are the crumbs all on your face? I didn't eat the cookie. We lie because we're trying to avoid things, either trying to obtain something or to avoid shame or embarrassment or some sort of punishment. People sin for money. People sin to gain power. People sin for pleasure, indulging in sin, indulging in gratifications. Is a selfish thing. And so if all these sins are rooted in selfish human things, then it serves to reason that Christ asks us to deny ourselves. It's no wonder that Christ asks us to deny ourselves, because at the root and our base desires, we can have make some pretty poor decisions. I could go to church, but I'd rather stay home. I could read my Bible, but I'd rather watch TV. I could help this person, but I'd rather rest. I could do this or this, but I would rather do this. Me, me, me. I. I could stand up for what's right, but I don't want to be embarrassed, or I don't want to be singled out, or I don't want to look different. Staying here in Galatians, the 5th chapter, talking about the things of the flesh that we are to crucify there in verse 24, if we back on up into verse 19 and 20, we get a list of what these works of the flesh are. What is it that we are to crucify? What is it that we are to nail to the cross? Verse 19, now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentiousness, jealousness, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murder, drunkenness, revelries, and the like. That's a long list. That's a long list. And those are the works of the flesh. And those are the things that we ought to desire. And in verse 24, it talks about how those who are in Christ have crucified these things. I've talked about the importance of selfishness, or the correlation between selfishness and sin. So if we can see a little bit of what it is that we are to do when we bear our cross daily, and we can all agree that it's important for us to bear our cross daily, then how is it that we can get better at this? Well, one, if sin is rooted in so much selfishness, then the easy answer is to be less selfish. Think of ourselves less and think of others more. And sometimes it can be difficult to control our thought processes, but we can do it. Our brain is a muscle that we can control and we can train, and it falls into habits. And we can force ourselves to think good things. We can force ourselves to sit down and read the scriptures and think about doing good works, as opposed to thinking about doing whatever it is that I want to do. Be it some gross immorality, or be it some slothful afternoon watching football on a Saturday for 18 hours. I don't even like football, but that's just an example. Baseball would be more my thing. But whatever our selfish desire is, but we ought to deny ourselves as much as possible and as much as is prudent. James, the 1st chapter and 27th verse, and also Philippians 2, verses 3 and 4, speak to this. I'll turn to that. I like that verse. Philippians chapter 2, verse 3 and 4. Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for your own interests, but also for the interests of others. That's a simple verse. I love the book of Philippians. It's my favorite book in the New Testament. There's a lot of good passages in a lot of places, but the book of Philippians just seems to boil it down in such simple, real, practical terms that those chapter 2, verse 3 and 4, I mean, if that's not just a beautiful description of how we are to live life, don't be selfish, esteem others more than you esteem yourself, and be humble. And those are the people that I respect, and those are the kinds of decisions and the kind of life that we ought to live. Another thing that can help us to bear our cross is to remember what has been done for us. I'll turn over to the book of James, the first chapter. James chapter 1, verse 17. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. Every good gift comes from above. Everything that we have. Everything. Everything that's ever made me smile is from God. That's a humbling thought. Every good gift comes from above. And lastly, how can we get better at this? Is taking a long-term focus and not a short-term. Don't focus on the challenges, but focus on the goal or the reward. Mark chapter 8, verse 36 tells us to contend for the prize. And we liken that sometimes to an athletic competition and all the training and the practice that goes in before game day or the race or whatever it is. But being short-sighted is very detrimental to our Christian walk and to our bearing our cross. If we can focus on the long term and not the short term, and if we can focus on others and not ourselves, then I think those are two huge steps in bearing our daily cross. I'm going to transition a little bit and then start to draw this to a close. Our life can be summed up as the sum of our choices. What my life is, who I am, the life that I live, is really just the aggregate of every choice that I've made along the way in my life. And it's amazing how some of these choices are big choices, and we know, and so we pray about them, and we know this is a big deal. This is something that we really need to put a lot of thought into. But yet also some of the more menial daily choices through our lives, day-to-day choices, impacts who we are. You know, what you eat for breakfast, that doesn't seem like a big deal. And, you know, typically it's not. But if you make the choice to eat a banana and grape nuts for breakfast every day, or if you make the choice to eat 2 pounds of biscuits and gravy every day, over the course of your life, that's going to make a difference, isn't it? The choices that we make impact who we are. They impact what we are. When I was 17, I was looking for a job, because I guess that's what you do when you're 17. I was looking for a job, and I threw out applications to a number of different places. Now, I don't even remember all the places, but the two places that I do remember, one was Kmart, and one was Osco Drug, which actually both those businesses and Lee Summit are out of business now. But but I applied at both Kmart and Osco Drug, and they called me up, and they both offered me jobs. And I didn't think about it way too much. I chose Kmart just because they called me quicker. So that's fine. I went and I worked for Kmart. And that at the time, 17, I didn't really care. I didn't really think about it. It didn't seem like that big of a deal. But working at Kmart, I met two brothers. Their mother worked at a bank, and when I got out of college, she got me a job at a bank. I had no idea, but it's quite possible that I wouldn't work in banking now if I would have chose Osco Drug at 17 instead of Kmart. That's just a simple little thing, and we all have those things in life. But choices, you know, our lives are impacted by these choices. When I was 13, I made another choice. I made the choice to follow Christ, and I was baptized in August of 1992 at the age of 13. That was a big deal, and making that choice changed part of who I am. Our life is the sum of our choices. We don't always make good choices. I've made a lot of bad choices. But yet who I am today, standing before you, is a product of that. So why do I bring all this up when I'm talking about bearing our cross? Well, Christ made a choice. Christ made a choice to come to earth. Christ made a choice to give his life. He made the statement that I give this of my own free will. Nobody takes it from me, but I give my life. Christ chose to do that for me. And he chose to do that for you. And when I think of some of the choices that I made, and I think of some of the things that I've done in my life, that's so humbling. Because frankly, I don't deserve it. Christ made a choice to love me so much and to die that I might have salvation when I don't deserve it. That's humbling, but it's truth. So that is the truth, and that is what has happened. So now, we have a choice. What are we going to do about that? Christ made the choice to die for us. Now, what are we going to do about that? We have the choice to take that serious. We have the choice to take up our cross on a daily basis and be a servant for him. Or we have a choice to be selfish and to entertain other pursuits. If there's anybody that would like to come forward and accept the gospel invitation, we encourage you to do so as we stand and sing the invitation number.